Dearest listener, no matter what season we are in, we can all benefit from a little self-knowledge. For this truth, we need look no further than the land Colin Bridgerton voyaged off to at the end of last season. As the Greeks know from its inscription upon the Oracle of Delphi, it is of benefit to know thyself. Socrates explained, "Isn't it obvious that people derive most of their benefits from knowing themselves, and most of their misfortunes from being self-deceived?" It is for this reason, dear listeners, that in advance of next year's marital scrum, this here author is offering some advice for all those singletons who'd love to secure the fate found by a Miss Daphne Bridgerton last year, the famed love match. To dig deeper, we need look no further than to the words of one unknowingly prognosticating Duke, who seemed to predict his future like that Greek oracle might. When last season's Diamond heard his proposition, "We could form an attachment," she had no idea that proposal would lead to a diamond ring. Nor, might I add, did the Duke of Hastings, who so hastily delivered it. And it is the word attachment that is the key. For, to succeed on the marriage market, we could all benefit from a little attachment theory. I imagine the psychologists would agree. Attachment style is either the thing that creates bonds unbreakable like a diamond, or those that crumble, like ancient ruins, leaving behind only relics in rubble of what was or what may have been. To avoid the latter, this author realizes it is important to know one's own attachment style. So, if you'd like to find your duke, your prince, or merely avoid the pitfalls of an unfortunate Lady Featherington, perhaps, dear listener, your ears should remain open. For, as there are four walls to this room in which I write, there are four attachment styles which psychologists agree one can be. One is the diamond of the bunch, able to secure almost any match, while the others seem more easily poised to make a match of the dating game. When it comes to the betrothal market, security comes not just in wealth, but as one grand attachment style. Security neither means trust funds nor bonds, but trusting one's partner and knowing how to bond. So, I'd advise from this lady in disguise to listen on and learn of this and the other three attachment styles, so you may be a happy bride. And to make it fair to a modern day room, why don't I add this too is for happy grooms.
Daphne and the Duke. Why did they work? Why were they able to work through their issues? Was it just because of love? I actually don't think so. I would hypothesize that it's actually because they had compatible attachment styles. Love may not always be enough to make things work out with the person we want them to. To go a little deeper, we must look at our attachment styles and attachment theory. Attachment theory is based off the idea that humans, all humans, have a genetic need to be in close relationship. To do that, we have an attachment system, which is essentially a series of emotions and behaviors that we use to stay connected to our loved ones and therefore stay safe and protected. Again, this is a physiological, biological need and system. So until you become aware of it, it's just functioning automatically within you. Where does our attachment style come from? Well, it comes from three things. It comes from primarily our relationship with our early primary caregivers. It is also believed it is influenced by our genes, as well as our romantic history and partners. So our attachment style is the lens through which we perceive intimacy and then the behaviors we use to respond to it and maintain it, or actually push it away, even though it is a need for all humans. And that's where different attachment styles come into play. Beyond being a genetic need, like, why is attachment theory important, and why are the partners that we choose important? Is it just something of fairy tales where we're wishing for someone to come in and complete us? No, that is not what it is at all. We even see, okay, in Bridgerton, partner choice greatly affects a female's quality of life and, frankly, ability to survive in the world. But even today, even though we don't have those same societal restrictions in Western society, the same is still true in the sense that an unhealthy relationship in which you're mismatched can actually have a detrimental effect on your physical health. In addition to that, it can also affect your belief in yourself and therefore your success in the world. So having a healthy relationship and healthy relationships and knowing how you relate to others is actually really important in a tangible physical way. I don't know how much the writers of Bridgerton know about attachment theory or attachment style, but the whole series is littered with verbiage and situations that harken back to it. There are four attachment styles. We're going to get into them. We see two of them play out really heavily in Bridgerton, so we're going to focus mainly on those, but we're going to touch on the other ones as well. Just to give you a little teaser of what's to come, I would even argue that in one of the final, or in the final dance scene between Daphne and the Duke, when it's raining, that the rain even has something to do with the Duke's ability to essentially see Daphne's point and engage in a healthier relationship with her. Before I go any further, I just want to say I am not a psychologist, I am not an expert on attachment theory. However, I read the book Attached by Amir Levine and Rachel S.F. Heller. It's a great resource if you want to learn about attachment theory. It's really kind of fun to apply it to your relationships and apparently even TV shows, which is what I'm going to be doing here. There's also a lot of information online, so you can do an internet search if you don't want to like get the book and find out some more about attachment theory. Other than that, I just want to say that any opinions in this podcast are my own. Any character impersonations are just that, they're parody, they're not meant to reflect any of the views of the writers of the show or of the book Bridgerton. The inspiration for this podcast episode really came from me personally reading the book Attached, and then, I mean, not even that much shortly thereafter, but having some knowledge of attachment theory and then watching Bridgerton, loving the show, but also realizing that in the process of watching it, my own attachment style was being triggered. My own reaction to Daphne and the Duke's relationship was really showing personally where I'm at in terms of my own attachment and how I approach and view relationships. It wasn't just passive viewing where, you know, I was enjoying the ride. I was actually engaged in the ride. And some of my personal inner monologue about that relationship and commentary on it really showed me that as much as I would love to be a Daphne in terms of my attachment style, right now I'm not. She does actually have the attachment style that is most able to find happiness in relationships the most naturally, so good for her. That gives us, the rest of us, if we don't have that one, something to work for if we want, or just become aware of where we are and who would be good for us in terms of our attachment style. You know, normally when we watch a drama with romance in it or a rom-com, we know there's certain emotional beats we expect to have the story hit. And while I do think that Bridgerton hit those, I think it actually had a bit more reality. In a lot of stories, I think there's this idea of like the savior and somebody changing for the other person. Well, in Bridgerton, I don't really think we see people changing. I think we see people's attachment systems working together. It's not just the love that changes them. It's actually more than that. It's a biological, physiological, psychological compatibility. So let's get a little bit more specific into the attachment styles now and then see how they play out in Bridgerton. So there are four attachment styles, and they are the anxious, the secure, the avoidant, and the anxious avoidant. Now the first three styles are the most common. Anxious people make up 20% of the population, secure people make up 50% of the population, avoidant people make up 25% of the population, and then that leaves 5% for the anxious avoidance, which is a combination of the anxious and the avoidant style. So we'll start with anxious and just do a little brief summary of what that is and what that means. Anxious people, they have a very deep need to be very intimate with their partners. They have a great need for enmeshment and intimacy. Yet with that, they often have a fear that their partner doesn't share those same desires and want to be as close to them as they would like. So they kind of come into relationships with a bit of a framework of danger where they're looking for issue. They're very sensitive to fluctuation in their partner's moods as well as behaviors. Often, though, their senses are accurate. That said, they're not always, and it's helpful for them to take a pause before reacting. Because what they also tend to do is take their partner's behaviors personally. Anxious people tend to think that there is something innately and inherently wrong with them, and so when there's a problem in the relationship, they take that personally as confirmation that there is something wrong with them. So when they start to detect that something is wrong in the relationship, what happens is then they start to engage in what are called activating strategies. And what those are, it's basically thoughts and emotions that start creeping into their sphere and their realm and their head to try to push them to reestablish intimacy with their partner. So these can take the form of things like obsessive thoughts or thinking that they'll never find somebody else or viewing their partner through a not totally clear lens where they only remember the good things about their partner. And then from there, those thoughts and feelings lead into behavior, which is called protest behavior. And protest behavior is behavior to try to regain that intimacy and therefore sense of security. But it doesn't always take a play out in the healthiest way, because anxious people don't necessarily communicate in the most naturally healthy way. So, for example, it can lead to things that are a little bit more manipulating in terms of behavior. For example, it could be things like telling your significant other that you just had lunch with your ex in an attempt to make them jealous. If your significant other takes 2 hours to respond to you as an anxious, you might then say, okay, well, I'm going to wait 2 hours before I respond to them. So even though these are all attempts to regain intimacy, they're not, you know, clearly communicated thoughts and words saying what is exactly on their mind. That said, if the other person, if their significant other, does reassure them and provide a sense of security, that will actually downregulate the anxious person, so they're no longer triggered into their activating system, and it brings them, you know, back to a baseline level that is essentially secure. A good partner for an anxious is a secure, so let's talk about the secures. Actually, secures are a good partner for everybody. Secures are naturally warm, they're naturally communicative, they're naturally loving, and they also believe the best in their partners. So essentially, secures want to be intimate, they also crave intimacy, but they're not worried that their partner can't offer that to them. They're very secure in the fact that their partner can show up for them in the way they need. So they don't take things personally, they have a strong sense of self and value. When something goes wrong in the relationship, they're not taking it as feedback that there is something wrong with them. They're able to communicate their needs effectively as well as their feelings, and also listen to their partner's emotional cues and respond to them and their partner's needs as well. I would argue that Daphne is a secure. We can get more into that in a little bit, but we're going to go through the next attachment style, which is the avoidant. And secures also do work well with avoidance, although avoidants tend to date anxious people a lot of the time, which is actually a highly combustible combination because they both reaffirm the other's fears about relationships. So avoidants actively repress their need for intimacy. It's very important for them to remain independent and self-sufficient. So they really prefer autonomy. And when they start to feel like a relationship is getting too intimate and too close, it reaffirms their belief in other people, which is that other people want to come in and squelch their self-sufficiency and independence. So in the same way that anxious person has a viewpoint that people can't be there for them and then seeks information to reaffirm that, avoidant people have a belief that people want to come in and ruin their independence, essentially, and then they are looking for cues that that's what's happening. Deep down, they do want to be close to others. They don't feel comfortable when they do get close. They always have an escape route. They always need to keep their partner at arm's length. They're the people that other people will complain that they're emotionally distant. And for them, when things get too close, when a relationship gets too intimate, they engage in deactivating strategies, which are thoughts and feelings essentially to create a distance with their partner. They're essentially a technique to squelch their feelings and squelch intimacy. That can be starting to, you know, pick apart things about their partner, like all of a sudden the way he or she eats annoys them. It can be the idea that even though there's nothing inherently wrong in the relationship, they still just feel like, oh, there's this mythical one dream person out there who will hit all these, frankly, potentially unrealistic expectations, and then they just sort of keep looking for that one. It can also be thinking, oh, that ex was the person for me. So this is the person who you might have a great date with, and it was great for them too, but then they don't text you the next day. They're sort of like this push and pull. As soon as you get too close, they pull away. And it was believed that these differing attachment styles could also have developed because of differing environmental conditions for humans. So, for example, an avoidant attachment style might have been really beneficial in an environment where disease or natural disasters were common or a big theme, because being independent might actually help your ability to survive. But as mentioned, attachment styles do come from a myriad of things, so it's also about that primary caregiver relationship. All that said, let's get to it. As mentioned, pretty sure Daphne is a secure, and our dear, lovely Simon Bassett, the Duke of Hastings, I would gander that he is an avoidant. Now, when it comes to attachment styles, you're not supposed to just look at one action or one behavior, but there's two main things you look at. One is a person's level of comfort with intimacy and closeness, or how much they try to avoid it. And the next is their anxiety about their partner's availableness and attentiveness, and essentially their preoccupation with the relationship. Avoidants are the ones that you'll actually most frequently find on the dating market. So the Duke. Why is the Duke avoidant? Well, for one, I think quite obviously he keeps talking about how he has no plans of ever marrying. So again, he's putting up an active barrier to avoiding intimacy, avoiding getting close to someone. We can definitely look at his relationship with his father and see why. Kind of goes without saying that that relationship was not very healthy, and you can totally understand why he might not want to be married. That said, the actions that he takes to implement his no marrying rule are definitely, in my opinion, hallmarks of the avoidant. We can see this when, at the first ball that Lady Danbury makes him go to, when he goes out into the garden to run away, he uses an escape route to get away from, in his words, certain people, i.e. mothers. Daphne is also out in the garden. That's where they first get together, essentially. She's out there trying to self-regulate her emotions. And it is in that garden where the Duke says to her, we could pretend to form an attachment. Literally using the word attachment, which I just think is so great because we're talking attachment theory. But the Duke has a plan to create a guise of intimacy to protect himself from getting intimate with anyone. That seems highly avoidant. But as we know about avoidance, underneath all that repression, there still is a need and a desire for connectiveness. And we kind of see that from Simon as a child, where he's trying to connect with his father. We also hear the Duke, when he's in that conversation with Daphne in the garden at that first ball, comment on his own unavailability when he talks about Lady Whistledown and saying that he thinks Lady Whistledown will presume exactly who they are, him, unavailable, and Daphne, desirable. So literally, he's telling us he is unavailable. He does not want intimacy. We see further avoidant behaviors as the relationship progresses. So another thing about avoidance, right, is they don't necessarily communicate their needs clearly. So when Lady Danbury tells the Duke that essentially he needs to propose to Daphne or let her move on and go along with the prince, the Duke breaks off his ruse with Daphne. But instead of being honest about why, he tells her, we were never friends. And then he says he's leaving London. So again, we see him clearly using physical distance in an escape route to squelch the intimacy that he feels with her and create a space between his feelings and hers. Another thing that avoidance will do is they'll kind of neg their partners a little bit to not show their true feelings, or they might act like they love you but never say, I love you. A one deactivating strategy is saying things like, I'm not ready to commit, or I'm not ready to be married, and then staying together for a really long time. And that's essentially what Simon has done to Daphne. Another thing is just keeping things sort of foggy and hazy to maintain a feeling of independence, keeping secrets. And again, Simon's not telling her why he doesn't want to marry. So these are all avoidant deactivating strategies. Then when Simon and Daphne actually do get married and they start having troubles, which I'm not going to get into what Daphne did and no comment there because I don't believe it was right, but when they have conflict, it is Daphne who's willing to talk through it, whereas the Duke takes the stance that, okay, they have a conflict, now they're going to be together but apart. He actually says that if she's without child, they'll stay married, but they will live separately and both be happy. And there is literally a subheader in one of the chapters on avoidance in the book Attached that is called Together But Apart. And again, the whole idea behind together but apart is you are technically in relationship with other, but you're using these deactivating strategies, some of which we've already talked about, to keep a distance from the intimacy with your partner. We can also see that Simon has the view that people are just out to catch him, which is actually a true view, to be honest. You know, all these mothers do want to scoop him up for their daughters. But still, that is a hallmark of an avoidant, because if you weren't avoidant and you knew that you were a hot commodity, you wouldn't be avoiding those mothers, right? I mean, maybe every now and then, I'm sure that could get overwhelming, but you wouldn't be literally trying to leave London, making a whole ruse just to get out of people trying to set you up with somebody. All that said, every attachment style also has its positive. I found it kind of amusing that when Simon says, I burn for you, it also harkens back to a study done in attachment theory. So there was a study done where they had a bunch of people with the different attachment styles in a room, and they had them taking tests on computers. So everyone in this room believed that they were being tested on whatever was happening on the computer. But there was another secret test going on to test their attachment style behavior. So as they're taking the test, one of the computers starts to burn. It literally is starting to smoke. And what happened, interestingly enough, is that the anxious people were the quickest to spot the danger. And that's theorized because their attachment system is on high alert for things going wrong. So that was a positive to the anxious attachment style. But the avoidants were the quickest to find a way out of the room because they're always looking for that escape route. Both those two insecure attachment styles both had positives to them in a real world example. So it's not just I burn for you, but it's like I could find the fastest exit in a room with a burning computer. Go Simon. I'm not sure what the secures were doing in that. So we see Simon is an avoidant. I think that the reason that Daphne and he were able to make it work, as mentioned, are because she is a secure. So let's take a look at some of the reasons that Daphne shows up as a secure. One, she's great at communication and saying what her needs are. She's willing to listen to her partner, but also communicate accordingly what she needs. In addition to that, she also has a good sense of self-worth. Even though she's completely aware of how society values her, that her whole value as a woman is her ability to marry well, and then have children, she doesn't allow that societal view to dictate how she feels about her. I mean, she rises to the occasion and is like, okay, this is what I'm groomed for. I'm gonna do it, but I'm not gonna let things going wrong in my relationships dictate to me how I feel about myself. Of course, she goes through emotions and she has ups and downs, but it's not the status of her relationship that dictates how she feels about her sense of self-worth. So within the framework of society, she knows what her duty is, but she still has a positive view of herself. And she also has a positive view of her partners, and we'll get into that in a little bit. So we see her communicating very clearly with Simon a few times when they're negotiating the rules of their ruse. She tells him he needs to send her nice flowers, that he needs to take her to six balls, communicating her needs very clearly, no games there. You also see her communicate very clearly with her brother Anthony. Now, Anthony may not listen to her, but she still is being very vocal about what she needs and wants and expects. We really see her doing this with Simon at a later ball when they definitely have started to develop feelings for each other and they're dancing. And she tells him, I will not have this go wrong. And she states that it's about her life and she must finally take charge of it. And she tells him, hey, if you don't agree with me, tell me now. And even as he makes a move on her physically a little bit, on the small of her back, she reaffirms what she is looking for, knowing that that's not what he wants, but she's not so enmeshed in him that she sacrifices what she wants and her needs for him, which would be something that we would expect more from like an anxious person. She tells him, you know, I wish to find a husband. It's time to have family and children. And he says, then let us find you a husband. So the other thing about secures is that they're able to accept their partner flaws, to depend on them, and to believe that there is something special and unique about their partners. Obviously, Daphne gets mad at Simon when she finds out why he will not have children. But ultimately, even through that, even despite that, she still loves and accepts him. Again, flaws and all. And this is where we see it, Daphne's attachment style allow her love to move through her and show that love is a choice. You know, Daphne tells him, just because something is not perfect does not make it any less worthy of love. She's got that beautiful scene with him. It's the last dance of the season. Party just got rained on. Everybody leaves. It's just Simon and Daphne. We've got our lovely romantic rain scene, which we see in so many movies, but I really think that the rain and this serve a role in helping Daphne downregulate Simon's deactivating techniques and be able to listen to her and sort of shift in his attachment style. And one of the ways you can shift your attachment style is through relationship with a secure. So that's actually been studied. And essentially what happens is the secures will model good communication and model behavior for whether it be an anxious or an avoidant. And that can actually help shift anxious and avoidance into a more secure attachment style or into a secure attachment style. So that is one way you can work on that. So Daphne says, your father made you believe otherwise, that you need to be perfect, essentially. And so again, it goes back to that primary relationship with our caregiver. But she tells him, I love you, even the parts that you believe are too dark. Every scar, every flaw. So why I think these words, other than just being purely beautiful, are able to get through Simon are because it's raining. Specifically with avoidance, they found that when avoidants are a little distracted, It actually lessens their ability to actively suppress their attachment needs. So avoidance, their whole system is based around repressing their attachment needs, right? About repressing the need for intimacy. But when they were distracted, they actually were less inhibited essentially towards intimacy. So I think the fact that it is raining on some level acts as a distraction for Simon, as well as the chaos of just having this ball interrupted, where he is able to access the part of himself that actually craves and wants intimacy and hear Daphne's words and then act on them. And she really guides him. And again, we said secures can be a role model for behavior. He says later, I don't know how to do this, something along those lines. That's not an exact quote, but yeah. And she says, yes, you do. We stick together. So that's Daphne and the Duke, the avoidant and the secure. Now, an anxious attachment style, if Daphne had been an anxious, she might take the Duke's actions personally. It's not about him loving her. It's about how he is in relationship due to his past, due to his history. So if she were an anxious, she would be taking those things personally and using that to view her own self-worth. And she probably would not have been able to communicate clearly and effectively and find a solution. You know, we saw Daphne talking to her mother. We saw her talking to Lady Danbury. Yes, she snooped and read the letters, but all these things were an effort to understand so she could help the relationship. I'm not telling you to go read anybody's personal letters, by the way. And so it's because of all this that Daphne and the Duke are able to move beyond attachment style and into love, because love is a choice. When you're unconscious of why you're doing what you're doing, you're not really choosing. So if your attachment style is controlling you without any awareness of it, you might not be able to choose love. So that's Daphne and the Duke and their attachment styles. I think there's a lot more to mine in this TV show. So maybe the next time you watch it, you can think about attachment theory. I've been thinking a lot about what I think Anthony might be. You know, are there anxious people in Bridgerton? Are they all secures and avoidance? I'm not really sure. I'd love to know what you think. So let me know. So all this to say, I think it's such a great line when Daphne and the Duke are talking and she says, I will not have this go wrong. This is about a life, my life. You know, this is your life. Take charge of it. It's exactly what she said. It's time I take charge. Take charge of it. It's not a ruse. It's not just a dating game. It can be for a while, but ultimately, to seek your happiness, I think it's important, if you're not understanding what's happening in your relationships, to start building bridges that help you understand. And I think attachment theory is one of those things that can help us. I don't think by any stretch of the imagination it's the only thing. You know, maybe for you it will be. For me, it is not. But it did help me. It helped me understand what was going on in some of my relationships. It helped me understand why I relate to certain people and get into certain types of situations. There are studies done that also say that avoidance and anxious actually end up dating each other a lot because they reinforce each other's views. You know, they say that we attract people and things to reinforce what we already think. Well, if you're doing that unconsciously, if you're engaging with people unconsciously, then you don't have the opportunity to ever question why, right? And if you're just picking people who reaffirm your own worst beliefs about yourself, well, that's not super happy. It doesn't necessarily lead to relationships that make you feel fulfilled and good. And as we saw, the health of our relationships can have an impact on our physical health and just our success in the world. So all I'd advocate for is start becoming aware of what your attachment style is. You know, it's nobody's fault, right? You know, there's actually even research that shows that it's good that humans have different attachment styles. It makes us more resilient as a species to have different ways of relating that work in different environments. But the good news is that they might be stable, but they're not static. You can change your attachment style. So there was a study done that said that 1 in 4 people in 4 years change their attachment style. So about 75% more or less of the population has the same attachment style. 25% change it. You know, you have an attachment style as a child, but you have the opportunity to change that as an adult. And with that, if you're secure, you do have the most likelihood for relationship happiness. That said, it would be good to be aware of attachment styles for you as well, because if attachment styles can change, you want to make sure that you're not shifting into an anxious or an avoidant. Secures seem to have the most options for relationship happiness. So it is something to be aware of. And I'm not explaining all relationship behaviors based on this. You know, you do have to pay attention to things that are red flags for you. Just having some knowledge of attachment theory, I think, can go a long way in helping you understand relationship behavior. Especially in this modern day and age, the marriage markets are closed, but dating apps are open 24/7. There's plenty of opportunity to get experience doing this. And if you're curious what kinds of things you can do to help shift your attachment style, you can check out the book Attached. I can give you one example. If you're an anxious, one of the things I recommend is the plenty of fish approach, where you essentially date multiple people, not in secret, right? Like, you want to be communicative, but you date them to get yourself less attached to somebody so quickly, where you start putting all of your eggs in that basket and then fantasizing just about that person. It can help you to have multiple people so you're not confusing attachment style with love, because it is something that can happen when your attachment style is activated. And you're obsessing about a person, you think that that is love, you think that that's because that's the one, but that's just your attachment style trying to keep you safe and protected. And somebody who's secure might actually seem boring to you because you're used to having an activated attachment style. With anxious people in particular, they talk about this because you're so used to being activated all the time, you actually run the risk of confusing an activated attachment system and style with love. Work with that and take a step back. Also, I am not telling you that it is good advice to go take your partner out in the rain if they're an avoidant and start talking to them about your relationship. I just have my own little theory about how that rain may have come into play for Daphne and the Duke. Totally not able to prove it, just a theory. But you know what? Psychologists, if you're out there listening, why don't we do a study on it? I'd be interested to know, does rain affect people? Does that count as a distraction?
To sum it up, dear listeners, an avoidant and an avoidant shall hardly ever be. But it's commonplace to find an anxious and an avoidant. An attachment pairing which typically leads to the sting of a wasp, not the honey of a bee. Secure is a style that's a catch for all. To be sure, it's one to be savored, as it can act as a role model for the others, with a communication style that's free from protest behavior. Though there are many pathways one can take on the journey to knowing thyself, the Bridgertons have made good on their name and provided us a bridge to one of those such ways. Attachment theory. If it's the Duke you want, just know, his style of attachment is about as in vogue as his fashionable clothes. It is the most frequently found out in the market. This is due to the fact that avoidants are out there avoiding attachment. And truth be told, life does imitate art. Or is it art that imitates life? Either way, for being the biggest avoidant move of all, we can again look to the Duke, or really, Reggae Jean Page. The actor has declared he won't be part of Bridgerton season 2, leaving his fans wanting more just as things were really starting to burn up, connections were formed, and the audience was feeling, well, attached. But for him, there is perhaps a greater dream, something more perfect, something else out there, and he must find it. As my final parting bit of advice, dear listeners, take these ideas and run with them. Unless you're an avoidant, in which case take them and practice getting intimate with them. Practice getting to know them, bonding with them, and not fearing the loss of your own freedom by holding them closely. Well, who are we kidding? We know the avoidants aren't listening anymore. They're in search of a greater podcast, more idealized, more perfect. They don't see the diamond that is this one, right in front of them. Now, if you're an anxious or a secure, I hope I can count on you to like, share, and subscribe to this, or whatever it is that you do, because we both know you're not one who's scared to commit. And that is where you shine, my diamonds.